Mike Bisaglia here from SeavillePodcast.com. You are about to listen to Runcast, a weekly form of everything running, with your host, Mark Lorenzoni, a community running expert who has been directing hundreds of area for nonprofit foot races and coaching thousands of runners for the past 30 years.
Hi, everybody. Mark here. Just happy to have you listening. Just a rehash, kind of a focus back. It's been a couple months we've been doing this Runcast just to basically remind folks maybe of the purpose of it. If you're just tuning in for the first time listening, and I've had some folks comment about it. One guy told me the other day, God, you talk for a long time. And, you know, it's been a fun thing. Main thing is to just try and get as much information out in about a half hour that we possibly can each week about our running community and all the wonderful people that make up the fabric of that running community. I mean, there's a lot of folks to mention, a lot of things to mention, and 85 events a year. There's several thousand people that are out there running on any given day. Raised a lot of money, $500,000 last year through the Charlottesville Track Club alone. A lot of neat stories, a lot of people that never race. A lot of people don't consider themselves real runners, which, of course, I do, but they've got great stories to tell, too, people accomplishing things for the first time in their life. So sometimes it gets a little wordy, but I do hope that folks at least learn a little bit from it, a little tip here or there. Maybe we call out someone that's your neighbor, someone you work with, and you can say to them, gee, I heard your name the other day. It's pretty cool stuff. this week, obviously, the week of the 10-miler, it's a big focus. I'm going to spend a lot of time today talking about it. In fact, that's going to be the main focus of today's podcast. Volunteers are still needed for the 36th annual Charlottesville 10-miler. It's our oldest and most revered foot race. Why is it most revered? It was because it's the oldest, because it was always, for the longest time up until about 8 or 9 years ago, it was the longest race in town. It was the first race ever that the city agreed and the university to close the streets down in support of the event. That had never happened prior to 1984. It was a lot of work, about 6 months of work, working with our forefathers, Cole Hendricks and Frank Buck was a mayor, Cole Hendricks city manager, Otis Hager was the traffic lieutenant. Really good folks that ended up supporting the event at a pretty high level. We're most appreciative. And here today we have a lot to show for it. It was about 300 runners back then. We're about 3,000 this year. A lot of money raised for good cause, entertained a lot of people. Great event. We think we spent a lot of time working on that course. There's about 10, 11 guys back in 83. We spent a good part of 83 and into early 84, testing and retesting different courses around town. The goal was to highlight the community, showcase the most fascinating, neatest parts of our town, and we think we've done that. Is it hilly? Come on, give me a break. Somebody says, you know, how is the 10-miler course hilly? I said, it's 10 miles in Charlottesville. And, I mean, we feel like we avoided some of the worst hills, and we ran the course in a direction we think is appropriate to make it less challenging than it would have been the first time we tested it out. We actually ran down Main Street, ran around the downtown and came up Preston. Come off the downtown mall sometime and come up Old Preston and come up Preston Avenue, up Grady to Rugby. Try that. Now, imagine that 7 miles into the foot race. Needless to say, we did that one time and said, forget this. We'll go down that hill at 4 miles and come back up Main Street, which is a much more gradual climb. So when I hear people complaining about the corner, you know, coming up the corner, I say, well, you could have had Preston. Could have had, you know, Grady. That's a longer hill, a mile.
I have not participated in the 10-miler. I've helped with the broadcast on WINA, but this is the first year that I'm actually taking part in racing in it, and my fiance and I are just really excited, looking forward to it. And I think it's cool that you get to see different parts of town, and of course there's going to be hills at Charlottesville, and I'm prepared for that. I'm ready for that.
It's a really special day, Mike, and I'm somewhat, not in the sense true envy, but I am envious of the feeling you're going to go through your first time here.
Right.
I directed it for a dozen years with my close friend, dear friend, Dave Murphy. And I was pretty fried after those 12 years. We had brought three kids in the world, Cynthia and I, during those 12 years. Our business was growing. I was pretty exhausted and said, time for someone else, new energy, kind of, you know, hand the baton over, which I did in 1995. So I went 84 to 95. And my good buddy Adam Slate was a director. I handed the baton to him, and he said, why don't you run the race? See what you helped create, you know, jump in. I hadn't run the race since the old course, the Camp Holiday Trails course, because we changed the course dramatically, like I was talking about, like in 83, 84. And I got to be the official star that year. It was pretty neat. And then I jumped in and ran the race with Cynthia. And it was the coolest experience. I got to see not what I had created, but what I had been a part of creating with a bunch of other people. Just, Mike, the fact that you go through intersections, the cops are holding the traffic for you, bands along the way, people cheering. It's a rush. You feel like you're floating for a good part of it. It's really special, event. And it's Charlottesville's largest participatory sporting event, other than the women's 4 miler, which is interesting. It's a single gender event.
Yes.
This is the largest co-ed sports event that people actually participate in a single day.
Very cool.
Very neat. Like I said, volunteers are still needed. Mike Inge is at the helm this year, so you can just email the charlottesvilletrackclub.org or call us at 293-3367. So in the books over the weekend, it's outdoor season. It's just getting started for UVA in high school, so nothing really of consequence that I'm aware of. But we had some locals do some cool things. Our buddy Glenn Anderson is in pursuit of, you remember, 50 states.
Right.
So he ran number 36 over the weekend with his buddy Peggy Mowbray. They went out to Arbuckle, Oklahoma, and they ran into of his 36 marathons that he's done. This was by far the hardest.
Really?
It was very hilly, Oklahoma. And, of course, the obvious, wind. Oklahoma is known, you know, the song from the play, you know, the wind comes blowing in at Oklahoma. So they had a headwind for 23 miles. It was 80 degrees. So the headwind was 25 to 50 mile an hour gusts. Every time they would go to get water at the water stops, it was blowing out of the cups in their face. So he said they finally had a system where they would hold the cup out at arm's length, tilt the cup towards them, and the wind would blow the water into their open mouth. So if you try to put it in your mouth up close, you got it. You drenched your whole face.
Jeez.
So amazing. His string of 28 straight sub-4 marathons was broken. I probably won't mention on the air how slow he ran for him. It was very slow. He said it was just it was a death march at the end. Peggy did quite well. Also struggled herself trying to get at the time she was shooting for, but congrats to both of them on that. Husband and wife, Heather and Mike Staninsky, they ran a trail marathon, Pocahontas State Park, just south of Richmond. Trail the whole way, off-road marathon. She's new to this trail running. He's not, and he ran 3 hours, 38 minutes. She ran 4:20. Congrats to both of them. And then Shamrock, their marathon was over the weekend. That's down at Virginia Beach. Have it every year. Flat, I think, personally, a little bit redundant and boring. You ever try and run at the beach for more than 5 or 6 miles, and you say, you know, unless you're on the sand, which I don't highly recommend doing.
It's tough.
It's tough. And they had a headwind a good part of the way. The two folks I'm going to mention, Kara Williams, 3:39, Caroline McNeely, 3:42, both the Boston qualifying times. Congrats, particularly to Caroline, in that it was her PR by 4 minutes, tremendous. And it's the first time she's qualified for Boston. Kara has qualified many times, so congrats to them. The Demiler, I thought, just in kind of our live and learn department and getting it right, I talk about some of the main, if folks get a chance to hear this podcast prior to Saturday morning, hopefully some helpful things to call out here. Some of the main mistakes made by people. And I detail these in the Daily Progress, today's edition, which by the time you hear this podcast, it'll be Thursday. But if you get to that Wednesday paper, the 23rd, there's a column in there, my monthly column, and I really detail them. These are the top mistakes I see that people make that really get them in trouble. And starting with, in kind of chronological order, not following your normal Friday routine. You and I have talked about this many times on the podcast, Mike. You don't want to eat something new. You don't want to experiment in a new restaurant. Definitely do not go out to eat. I don't understand that one. If you're traveling to a race, you obviously have to eat out.
Right.
But my gosh, nothing like the comfort of your own home, your own food, your own routine, your own type of drinks at the time you want it. What if you get to a restaurant and they say there's a backup? It's going to be, you know, we got a wait, or there's some problem with the food, and, you know, there's something astray. It's just bad news. You got your own home, your own bed, your own bathroom, all of that stuff. Stick to that routine. And then the next morning, do not try anything new. No new shoes unless it's the same model you've worn in the past. And I do argue that one. People are surprised to hear me say it. Sometimes they'll say, well, my shoes are dead, but I can't wear a new pair on race morning. Oh, yes, you can. Because the dead pair, you're about ready to take a big journey, serious event, the 10-mile, a lot of hard downhills. You don't want to do that in a dead pair of shoes. As long as you get in the same model, that's about the only thing I'll let you do new.
Right.
It's not really new. It's just that the shoes are the same model. They're just a brand new pair of them. No new shorts, no new socks, no new drinks no new goos or gels. You don't experiment on race day. The experimenting's over. Now it's time to take the test. And people don't like that term. It gets them nervous, gets them uptight. But it is a test of sorts. And people that have studied and prepared for tests, they do well in it. They go in pretty confident, nervous. We're all nervous. I'm nervous. You're probably nervous. It's a big deal. You better be nervous about the taking reverence, take stock of this event. Flip side is, if you're prepared, you can really nail it well.
I have my T-shirt that I will be wearing on Saturday ready. It's my New York Giants T-shirt. I run in it, and it's the comfort level is perfect. I feel like I'm not wearing a shirt. It's just, I now know which shirts I like and don't like. It's the New York Giants shirt that's seen better days, but it will be worn on Saturday.
Good. Just be aware that I'm always a little panicked about heat this time of year for this 10-miler. Yeah. About every third year we get scorch. It's going to be the opposite. It's going to be right around 35 to 38 at the gun. It's going to be overcast. There's possibility of rain, they're saying at this point. This could change. Highs in the mid-40s. That means it's never going to get really warm. So, you know, if you're used to a short-sleeve shirt and you can handle that in colder weather, fine. But you may want to put something over it. And remember, your race number needs to go on front, but it doesn't have to be exposed till you come towards the finish line. So sometimes someone was asking me the other day, you know, do I have to have it exposed? I want to put something over it. No, but you expose it as you're coming to the finish line. Line up properly. Now, this plays into having a game plan. A lot of times people don't have a game plan. This is their game plan. I'm going to run how I feel. And run how you feel. Well, that's dangerous because you're going to feel really good at the start. So you're going to go out fast. It's all uphill for the first mile. It's the hardest mile of the entire course. Little known fact, first mile. First half mile is a continual climb. You run that too fast. You push it too hard. You're going to feel fine there. You'll feel fine. It won't nab you till about 6 miles, and then the hammer's going to come down. So you don't run. It's the opposite. That's a cliche. You fight the cliche. You look at your watch. You have a game plan. So if you're shooting, let's say, 90 minutes, you're trying to run 9-minute pace. Your first mile is still a warm-up. You want to run about 9:20 to 9:30. And I would argue first half mile should be almost close to 5 minutes, 10-minute pace. What? Yeah, you have 20 half miles. You throw the first one out as a safe way of preparing you for your long journey. You got 19 more half miles to go. You start picking up the second half mile. You get to the mile mark. You're at 9:20. Oh, my God, I'm way off my pace already. I was supposed to run 9 minutes. No, it's the opposite. Pat yourself on the back. You just store it away, the effort of a 9-minute mile, because it's all uphill. Remember, perception of effort. And that's a big thing I want to talk about today again. That you want to maintain the effort throughout the race, not the pace. What? Doesn't make any sense. I'll repeat it. Maintain the effort, not the pace. If you try and maintain that 9-minute pace on an uphill, that effort's actually like an 8:30. That's meaning equates to you burning gas prematurely. We've talked about it many times. I still go crazy with this. The longer the race, the greater the game plan you got to have. The more checked into, dialed into what you think you're capable of. And you can look at a course and know mile by mile pretty much what you want to be hitting. It's fun. And I always tell people, break any long distance race down to the mile. So it's 10 quizzes rather than one big test. Mm. And you know on any given day you have a bad quiz, you screw up 1 mile, it doesn't kill you for the semester. But if you go into it blind, say, I'm just going to run how I feel, you can end up blundering the whole test. How you make up that 9:20 is on the downhills, you run 8:30. Shooting for that 9-minute pace, run 8:30. The perception of effort, it feels like 9 minutes. It's so doggone easy. But you said it's 8:30. Yes, on a downhill. The only place you actually hit your pace is on the flats. And this year with the new finish, which is a gift from the heavens, it's all downhill the last mile. You can afford now, the 10-miler entrant, to start your push. Not all out assault, but you can start mentally digging in at the statue right across from the bus station down there at about 7.5 miles. You work your way up Main Street, which is a long, gradual, straightaway, little bit of an uphill. You're climbing all the way up towards the JPA there and the Red Roof Inn. And then you got that last hill to push up at the corner. And then pretty much it's cake time. You hit the chapel and you got about a mile to mile and a half of, you know, pretty good running where your effort doesn't have to be as much and you can be running faster. So I would argue this year that that 9-minute pace person wants to really try and hit 9-minute pace coming up Main Street, even if it's a slight climb. I just finished saying you shouldn't try and hit the 9-minute pace on a climb, but that late in the race and with such a reward waiting for you on the other side, such a relief for your body to really recover, that 9-minute pace person should be able to run in the low eights for that last mile. It's just that ridiculously downhill. It's not steep downhill, but it just, you don't have to work. You just kind of lean into it, open up the stride, and oh my gosh, way you go.
I appreciate you picking 9 minute miles because that's exactly what I'm going for on Saturday. So this
it's a huge goal.
This works out well.
You know, we talked last week about the quiz question was the median time the last few years. Last 5 years has floated between 92 and 95 minutes. So you'll be faster than the median time. Now, if it isn't raining and it's not windy, this weather is brewing to be perfect for racing.
Yeah.
And with the new finish, we're going to have some pretty cool things going on this week. So the other thing is, you know, people ignore their breathing when they're out there. Your breathing is your heart rate monitor. It's it's kind of the oil light, the pressure, whatever, on your engine, on your car gauge. You've got to be able to listen to your breathing and respect it. So if you're going up a hill, you better slow it down because you're leaking gas. You're burning it. You're burning it out the back fast. You got to slow it down, get it together, go for that effort, not for that pace. So, so those are some tips. The other thing I wrote in the paper today was, I don't know how I word. I said, this is my last tip, and it says, above everything else, make sure that you celebrate your accomplishment. In a town full of runners, it's easy to lose perspective of just how amazing a feat it is to conquer this 10-miler course. Even after 30 years of being a part of this wonderful event, that's how long I've been involved as a racer, as a race director, and now as a coach, I still tell folks that when you cross the finish line, know that you've completed one of the most incredible sporting achievements in our community. You have. And it's a town, we lose perspective quite often. Folks run the 10-mile. Oh, I've got lots of friends. They've run marathons. I know someone who's run a 100-mile race. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
But you're running the 10-miler is still a huge deal. You're very much separated from the national population, from the you know average American. You are in a very small. I hesitate to use the word elite, but you're in a small percentage of the population that can handle a course of this magnitude and run it the whole way. So if you run 9-minute pace, Mike, that's impressive. That's good stuff.
Cool.
So your first mile, let's quiz you.
Right,
what does it need to be? What should you be hearing read to you as you come up to that corner of Alderman and McCormick, and you're starting? It's a little bit of a downhill now. You've gone by the Catholic Church with the metal. I call them the metal Buddha, which is disrespectful, but it looks like almost like a Buddha out from the Catholic Church there at St. Thomas. What are you going to be hitting for that mile?
I'm looking at 9:25, 9:30.
Yeah, and you're not going to panic because you're going to know that what you've done is stored away a good solid. That's hay in the barn. Now, a lot of people think hay in the barn would be 8:30 pace. Oh, I'm up 30 seconds. They're really going to be down about 2 minutes at the end.
Now, I don't know. For me, I usually feel that extra burst come in that 4 to 5 miles once I sort of get through that first three. And a lot of the times, that's the hardest part. And then once you start moving and going and you're in mile 4 and 5, then you feel
the I'm in
the groove. If you
line up properly on race morning, you line up properly, you shouldn't pass someone for the first mile.
Right.
But if you listen to what I'm saying and you don't start practicing POE, perception of effort, until you go through the 2 mile mark, after 2 miles, you come by the AFC, you can begin to now relax and do POE. You should pass people the next 8 miles. No one should pass you after 2 miles. But remember, the key to that is you don't pass anyone in the first mile. If you're passing people in the first mile, you're not going to hit that 9:20 pace. If you line up with 9-minute people, which I would argue you shouldn't, you probably should line up more 9:30, 10-minute pace. I've encouraged Mike, the new race director, to get pace kind of ribbons across the road
That's
so people
smart.
Know where to line up.
It's good.
Really, I that was what I wanted to spend the time talking about today, mostly was the 10-miler. There'll be tons of stories next week, lots of things to talk about as we have lots of neat stories. Got so many people in this event this year with so many cool things. We got the graduates at the 10-miler training program. We had almost 400 people in that training program, of which probably about 225 made it through a cold, dark winter, did great. Call out somebody like the family at the Schnellers with Tim Schneller on the dad's side and Christine on the mom's side, new to the sport 3 years ago. They ran Marine Corps this year. Now they got their daughter, Caroline. We talked about Caroline before, you know, Western Alma basketball player and going to row at Ohio State. She got a scholarship to row for the Buckeyes, and a crew kid. So pretty neat. Family got a lot of family stories like that. Got a lot of novices. Got a lot of people like yourself. So this is huge deal. It's the first time doing it, and to run it that fast, 9-minute pace, pretty impressive.
And I'd like to call out because it really does make a difference. It's just the people that are on the side streets cheering and clapping. There is something about being on your last mile and having maybe being 3/4 of a mile out and having somebody, a complete stranger you don't know, cheering for you and giving the thumbs up that does give you a little boost of adrenaline and energy inside. It's a huge difference knowing that.
It particularly works if you're feeling like you do have some energy. But I've been in the ugly zone myself where I've gone out too quickly. And all this preaching I do comes from a lot of my own mistakes.
Right.
Gone out too quickly in the last couple miles of a race. People say, good job, way to go. And I feel like turning them saying, hey, it isn't a good job. I feel horrible. It's not way to go. Thank you for saying that. But I'm dogging it right now. I stink. But when I am feeling good, that little boost like that can really, you know, but I'm kind of starting to feel a little tired. Still got some energy, but starting to wane a little bit. Somebody saying, shouting out like that makes a big difference.
I almost look at it like the home field advantage for a team when they're at home and they get that cheer.
Yep.
And that's why teams typically win more at home and stuff like
that's
that.
True.
But yeah, it's interesting.
So no other local events to note this week. Obviously, nobody in their right mind would try and put something on the weekend of the 10-miler. It is the happening story. Next weekend, very cool. We've got the Run for Life, the Zeta Girls putting that on Saturday morning, April 2nd. Very neat stuff. Big race, breast cancer run. It's kind of the student's version of the women's 4-miler, except it's both sexes. And they do a really good job with that every year. So we really encourage folks to think about that as a post-10-miler. That's about as far. And by the way, call out to that. Mm. It's in my tips this weekend. It talks about what to do next week. Nothing more than 2 or 3 miles on any given run next week. Even the big boys, the ones that are experienced doing this, should be taking it calm next week. And even the following week, the most you should do is 3 to 5 miles at any given time, so 2 weeks out. So it takes about 2 to 3 weeks to start to recover from an event as serious as a 10-miler when you're racing it. Last week we said, the median time was between 92 and 95 minutes the last 5 years. I said, what was the median time the first year we went to this course? Answer was 75 minutes, if you can imagine. How much it's changed. It's gone almost 2 minutes, shifted the other way. Has the course gotten harder? No. Have people gotten slower? No. But people participating in the sport are slower people, more recreational oriented, meaning they're not, this is not their living. They're not former high school, state champions. Very cool growth of the sport. So in 1984, the first year we went to the streets, the last place person was about 90 minutes. Mm. Last place. Now in 90 minutes, you'll be ahead of the median. You'll be in about 1,000th place, maybe 800th place.
That's cool.
And there'll be about 2,000 people behind you.
Wow.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So that's the answer to that one. And then this is a unique thing that's going to happen this year, Mike. This is because we had to change not an intersection, not a little turn here or there. We had to change the entire last mile of a course. All the course records that were run between 84 and 2009 are in the books. Mm. They can't be touched now. They're all put to bed.
Gotcha.
Just like all the course records for the old Camp
Hovertrust
from 76 to 83, they've been in the books forever. So everybody that wins their age group this year is going to set a course record for their age group. And the male and female winners, people who come across the finish line first, they will have the course records overall. Seth Hutchinson, of course, the pre-race favorite. He won the race last year. He's defending as he's marching towards Boston again. So one of the Seth's goals has been to try and break the elusive 50-minute barrier. Breaking 50 minutes, big deal. Only 3 people have ever broken 50 minutes on any of the courses, the first two. The first one, no one ever broke 50. So on this city course, only 3 people have done it. Who was the first? And I give you a hint, he's a really well-known personality in the community, running personality, not TV personality or radio personality. And to run under 50 minutes is a pretty big deal. So who was the first? And a quick sidelight to show you the perspective that everybody is going to run under 50 minutes. A few years back, John Shrum, good buddy, he's a champion long-distance swimmer. He's done that swim around Manhattan. I don't know if he had the record at one time. He swam the English Channel. He and his family, big swimmers, his kids swam for UVA. He's a dermatologist, I think is what John's title is. Great guy. He comes in the store one day to get shoes about a week out from the 10-mile, and his store's really busy, and he yells out, Mark, I'm here today to get some new shoes, but more importantly, I'm here today to have you help me figure out how I'm going to get under 50 minutes at the 10-miler next week. So, of course, everyone turned their head. Almost everyone can respect what that means. That's 5-minute pace. And he wasn't a young man at the time. He might have been in his early 40s, mid-40s at the time. So what the heck is John talking about? So I look up and I said, all right, John, I want you to clarify that. And he goes, well, I will clarify it for you. I'm guessing that I'm going to hit under 15 minutes at the 10-miler somewhere about 5 or 6 miles. And you got to help me come up with a game plan. And I thought that was great. He had summed it up. You know, in other words, he's slow, slower, and he's going to hit. Everybody's going to go under 15 minutes at the 10-miler. It just matters where on the course.
Exactly.
And we always say it'd be really neat to get an aerial shot of the leader crossing the finish line, breaking the tape, and watch the snake as it goes back up Emmett, all the way up McCormick, down Main Street, down around the downtown area, and works its way down the mall and up Preston. Because at about 4 miles, your back person is going through the 4 mile mark when the leader is going through the finish line.
Right.
Pretty cool.
That's wild.
So, all right, everyone. We hope everybody gets, if you're not running the race, can come on out and do exactly what Mike was encouraging people to do. It means so much. It's come on out and cheer. It's a great spectacle. A great viewing point this year is the footbridge. At Lambeth there, or along Emmett Street, going to be awesome finish. So looking forward to that on Saturday. And, of course, it's live on WINA. I get a chance to ride with my buddy John, the Dagger Freeman.
I forget. That's his nickname.
But John, of course, is a lacrosse voice, but he takes a hiatus from that at least for a few hours every year to do the into this, and I'm really looking forward to that. It's
awesome.
10:70. I think coverage starts at about 10 after 7.
That's
something
right.
Like that. All right. Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.
This week's edition of RunCast was brought to you by the Ragged Mountain Running Shop, Central Virginia's community running and walking family partner since 1982. Conveniently located on the historic UVA corner with free parking at their doorstop. Visit them online at RaggedMountainRunning.com or make sure you friend them on Facebook, Ragged Mountain Running Shop.